Hi, I'm Katie Stone Perez, and welcome to today's episode of Level Up. So I'm here today with Jamie with Clay Entertainment. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, so would you mind actually telling everyone a little bit about your role in the studio?
Oh, sure. So I'm the founder of Clay Entertainment. We make games such as Mark of the Ninja and Don't Starve. And, you know, we've been around making indie games since 2005. My role here these days is to run the studio, make sure everything's going well, but I also do a lot of design work. I still program every once in a while when they let me, you know, but it's just a good time making new games. Yeah.
Very cool. Mm-hmm. So I know I've had the honor of actually working with you guys since you actually got your start, because I know Eats actually came out on Xbox Live Arcade.
Yeah.
So it's been great to work with you for so many years. So tell us a little bit about how you got your initial game going and kind of started your own studio.
Sure. So I used to work at Relic, and I was making Dawn of War. I was a AI programmer there. But also in my spare time, I was just kind of making my own games and trying to figure out if I could make my own game. And so I got a whole lot of volunteers with some friends of mine together, and we just come over to my place and jam out some games, work at home as well, and I built my own servers and things like that. I bought a $5 server off Relic, their very first server. Their server cost $10,000, and they sold it to me for $5.
Oh, wow.
Because, you know, so old. It had six hard drives, and each one was one gig large. Each hard drive was a gig large, yeah. And it sounded like a jet engine when you turn it on. And it took us about a week to set it up because it was just so outdated. It was really hard. But we set up a server from that, and everybody worked out of that. And we made a game called Eats. So when we made that game called Eats, we showed it around to people and just kind of said, hey, look what we made. And people started saying, hey, maybe you can sell that thing, because I like it, other people would probably like it. And so I said, well, what do I have got to lose? So I quit Relic, and we started a company, and we started selling Eats on our website. And then after that, we got to work with you, putting it on Xbox 360. And, you know, we just kind of slowly built up from there over the last 10 years.
So now I think one of the things that kind of helped along the way too is that you guys were actually able to get a Canadian Media Fund grant. Is that right?
Yeah, so early on, you know, we had no money. It was whatever I had saved up from Relic. And some people who were working with us, you know, Alex Colbert still works with us. And at that time, he had no income at all. So I paid his income as well out of my savings, right? And so that wasn't really going to last very long. Luckily, we live in Vancouver. There's this Canadian Media Fund where they basically fund arts programs. They fund different digital media. At the time, it was called the New Media Fund because it was so new.
Oh,
that
wow.
Digital download was so new. And we got some matching funding, basically. Whatever we put in, they would match. And that kind of got us the start and also allowed me to get out of our basement. So I was renting a basement at the time, and everybody would come over to my home. Which was fine, but it was really disruptive for my life, and I really wanted to get out. So we used that money to be able to rent a little office. And our first office was about 100 square feet.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, literally about 100, maybe 120. And we fit four people in about 100 square feet. And, you know, it was... I think back fondly, but I never want to go back. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Very cool. And you guys have obviously come a long way. So how big is your studio now?
We're 50 people right now.
50, wow.
Yeah.
Very cool.
We work on a whole lot of different projects, so we don't have one big project where 50 people work on it. We have about four different projects, so it's about, you know, 10, 12 people per project. And we try a lot of different things, you know, and some of those things work and some of the things don't, and that's kind of how we like to roll because, you know, we want to experiment a lot.
So that's one of the things I think is so interesting about your studio is that so often you find people and they find kind of like a specific genre, mm-hmm. and then they'll go off and make that game and or a similar style game again and again and again. But yet you guys have come out and you guys have made Eats and Shank and Mark and Don't Starve, all of these extremely different, diverse games from each other. So how has that been? Like, what kind of drove that, and how has it been to navigate making a completely new game each time?
Well, so the reason I started a studio was to be able to make cool games. And so if we were to make the same game over and over, then that kind of defeats the purpose of why we started making games in the first place. So we're pretty adamant that we wanted to do different things. And after a while, it became a joke that we would just totally do something totally different every time. But what really happened was, like, when it really started getting going was after we did Shank, and we did Shank 2, and we did Mark of the Ninja, people started knowing us as the side-scrolling company. Mm-hmm. And we really wanted to get away from that for several reasons. One, we were sick of it. We're just sick of making the same game again or the same engine again. But the other really important thing was we didn't want to be pigeonholed and end up in a place where if the you know, if the market changed or people's tastes changed, we would just get left behind, yeah. Right? So we made a really conscious effort to do something different. And in fact, when we're starting to do prototypes, you know, for Don't Starve and things, we called it Project Not Side Scrolling. That's actually what we called that. And so that we could figure out, you know, what else is it that we can do? And we really believe that, you know, the principles of design, when we think about the kind of experiences that we want to provide people, that can span a lot of different genres. And I think that we've proven that that's the case, that if you think deeply about it enough, that you can do all sorts of things.
So what is that core tenet that you guys are driving when you guys are prototyping or incubating? What's that core tenet that you guys are staying true to?
So what we usually say is that we create remarkable experiences that you can't get anywhere else. That's what we talk about, right? And that's to say that we want games where after you've played it, you'll tell someone else, hey, you need to play this game because you know you've never had this experience. You need to have that experience, right? So if you play Mark of the Ninja, you'll tell someone that was the best stealth experience you've ever had. You feel like a real ninja and you really need to play this. And you also won't say, or you could play some other game, because there's really literally no other game like it, right? They might say that it's kind of like Tenchu but side-scrolling, you know, so they might say things like that, but in the end, this is where you get that experience, right? So we really try to get those kind of emotions out every time that we build a game.
Very cool. That's such a cool tenet that you guys lead with. Mm-hmm. So, and it's so true. I mean, that's why I have always loved the content that you guys bring onto the platforms, is because it is so unique, but it's so high quality too. Nothing you guys do is not just so polished, right?
Thank you.
You can just, in the design and the visuals and everything, it just always comes together as such a beautiful package.
Thank you.
So I think that really stands out for your studio too.
Yeah, I mean, I think that, you know, over the time we've learned how to do it. You know, when we began, it was just me and two other programmers. So we were all programmers. And so when you look at Eats, you know, I did some of the art and we hired some other people to help us do the art, but really the core team was programmers. And so we were, in our opinion, lacking on the design side and lacking on the art side. And then you know, I started working with Jeff Agala, who's now our creative director, art director, and he and I just complement each other perfectly because he's part technical but very, very artistic. And you know, I'm mostly technical and I have some art, so at least as a hobby. And so that's how we kind of filled those gaps. And then over time, I think starting with Mark of the Ninja was when we really decided, okay, we need to get good at design as well. We really need to figure this out. So actually, in our opinion, you know, Shank is not the greatest game for us. It really starts with Mark of the Ninja and onward, where we feel like, oh, we got our groove now. Now we can do all the things that we need to do to make
great
games.
I think Mark was exemplary. I think, though, even just looking back at Eats, like the amount of polish in that game for how small a team you were still blew me away at that point
Thank
in
you.
Time.
So, yeah.
But obviously, what you guys do now and the quality of the characters that you guys end up creating. Are just amazing. So let's actually talk about these guys for a second, because merchandising too is something that a lot of people dream of being able to do with their video games.
Right.
But you guys have executed on it brilliantly. You have all this amazing stuff. So how did you guys actually get into the merch space, and how is that going?
Right. So the first thing that we made was this guy here. This is Shank. This is a Shank figure. And we only made 300 of these, I think, and they sold out. What happened is that we just really like figures, and we decided that we're just going to make them because we like them. That's what happened. Jeff had a contact with Eric Scarecrow, who at that time was living in New York, and he's a toy creator. You know, so he designs them, he makes them, he makes his own, he makes other people's, and then he also figures out the manufacturing in China and sends it over and does
distribution,
like the whole bit. And you know, it's super complicated.
I don't think people realize that.
Yeah,
all the choices and detail that.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. And not only that, but you know, the delays are crazy. So you know, after you want to make it, you know, you decide you want to make it, you got to design it, you got to do a prototype, you do passes on that. So we have these clay prototypes of Shank actually from way back then, and then you send it to China. You have to wait for them to build it, and you have to wait for it to ship. When they ship, there might be delays. It just goes on and on. right? But we just really wanted it, and we decided that we're going to invest in it. We had no money, and yet we still just went ahead and did it. We did it because we wanted toys in our office of our things, right? Yeah. And it was, you know, it didn't make us money for sure. We lost money on it, but it was great gifts for people. You know, people loved it. We also used it on press tours, and people really loved it then, and it was a thing to talk about, right? And the only time, I mean, now it's actually become a business, a part of our business, right, where we build all these different different figures. You know, we have this is Zombie West. This is one of our special edition ones, and all these different plushies and even the controller. You know, it works when you have a huge fan base as a business. That's the only time it works, is if, you know, you have millions, literally you have to have millions of players, and then you can really get it. Or you could do it in a Kickstarter style. You know, Hotline Miami did this thing, also with Eric Scarecrow, where they were able to fund a like a 6-inch figure.
Oh, right? Cool.
Like it was huge, really nice figure that's very well articulated and all that. So those were really high priced things. So you can do that. We decided that we were going to go broad and go with a lot more figures as we built along the way.
Very cool. Right? So where did you start selling them? Did you start selling them at like PAX, or did you start selling mm-hmm. them like online? And yeah. What's been most successful for people who want to kind of get into that space?
So we did sell them at PAX, and it's super tough to sell them at PAX. And not in the sense that people won't buy it. People will buy it. But again, shipping and logistics becomes
yeah.
really, really hard. Like Chester that you're holding, you know, a big box.
I love Chester. I really love Chester.
A big box can maybe hold 50 of them.
Oh, wow.
Right?
Yeah.
Because they're so big, right? So imagine trying to bring that to PAX and trying to bring enough for everybody to buy them. It's just not possible. So we bring as many as we can, and we always sell out. So that's why we started pushing more and more online for us.
Very cool.
So we sell most of our merchandise online, and really it's we focus on making something that's really high quality. As you can see, this is super functional. It works extremely well, and for us, it's for the fans rather than to make a profit.
Very
right?
cool.
So we always focus on that.
Very cool. And what, like, are you guys selling them on your own site, or are there
yes.
other sites that you guys are partnering with too? Or
we're currently
primarily?
Just selling on our own okay. site. That this is exclusive on our own site, and
cool.
really it's because we want to control that experience. We want to make sure that it's great. We want to make sure that, you know, if somebody has a problem, they can actually contact someone for sure.
Yeah.
And we can do right by them.
Very
so.
Cool. Mm-hmm. So when you guys think about your history, this amazing history of over 10 years now, mm-hmm. what are some of the biggest, you think, like lessons learned or things that just go so much smoother now than they did before for you guys?
I mean, there's just, it's a never ending stream of learning, I suppose. and I'm still learning for sure. You know, some of the things that really helped me out was to keep our options open. Was I think one of the, you know, the one of the core things that I heard was, you know, when I started, Alex Garden ran Relic, and, mm-hmm. and he mentioned to me once that the biggest strength of an indie is of an independent is options, is how many options they have, and so I took that to heart and I thought about it really hard, and really what it meant was that. You know, there's so many different options of funding, of platforms, of games that you want to make, of people you want to hire, if we locked ourselves in, it was very hard to change, and very easy to get stuck in a place where we couldn't. I'll give an example here: is that you know, if you take funding. If we took funding from a publisher and they said, you have to ship at this date, right? That's fine, but there needed to be some flexibility, otherwise the quality of the game would suffer.
Mm-hmm.
And that had extremely long-term impacts.
Mm-hmm.
So one thing that was great about working with Microsoft was that you were really you were flexible in the time frame. So I remember Mark the Ninja was supposed to ship early in the year, I think it's 2012. It was supposed to ship early 2012. And we ended up finishing the game in the summer. So about 6 months later, right? Or mm-hmm. 3 to 6 months later.
Yep.
And those 3 to 6 months made all the difference to making it a great game.
Yep.
It was a good game, and it brought it to be a great game,
yep.
right? Now we ate the cost to do that, but we also had the flexibility to at least be able to do that.
Yep.
Right.
Yeah. I can definitely see that. That's one of the number one things when I'm talking to developers and they're like, oh, we want to announce this date or this target time frame. And I'm like, oh, it's a little, you know, it makes me a little worried, especially if you are doing something really innovative that hasn't been done before, because you just, in game development, it's not software development. It's not something that you spec and you code it and you just go. You find these kind of nuggets and gems along the way, and you'll be playing a game build and, you know, one night you're like, it's still kind of work playing it. And the next night you play the new build and you're like, oh, this plays awesome, right? Like all of a sudden you're sitting around and you're laughing and you're having fun. And to be able to go towards those moments, I think is so important in game development to create exactly what you guys have done, which are those extremely high quality experiences. They often end up taking a little bit more polish and time. So
yeah.
So how are you guys planning for that now, knowing that you guys kind of need that? Do you just work that extra buffer time into your guys' schedules and plans, or?
So we try to figure out what the core of the experience is as early as possible, is really what it is. We're in a great lucky position where we can take our time to make a game. Because our games have been successful, it's become easier and easier for us to be able to say, okay, we need more time or we need to do this. And we also know we've worked together for so long that we have a process of being able to prototype quickly, right? One of the examples of not being able to do that was for Shank. In the March of, I think it was 2009, that's right. It was 2009 in March, we went to PAX East and we were showing off the game and we had two levels done and we showed them. And that was the whole game that we had done. We had two levels. And the whole game is 15 levels. And we finished that by June. In June, we had the game was done. So we did another 12 levels in 3 months, and we did two levels in over a year, right? And it was one of the most intense times, one of the experiences which, you know, after that experience, it was very clear to us that we could never ever do that again. It really quite destroyed us, right?
Yeah, so that's, I know, one of the things that you and I have talked about previously during lunches and dinners and things,
right.
And just the importance of family and kind of life outside of the studio as well. So how is that something that, as the founder and really the owner of the studio, how are you guys bringing that to life for your employees?
It becomes something that's, well, for us, it's something where we feel like if we're not able to do it, then the studio is not sustainable.
Yeah.
And so we took that to heart, and we felt like that was going to be one of the core things that we need to accomplish. And we didn't accomplish that right away, but it was something that we really strove toward and believed. And I believe that that's one of the biggest stumbling blocks for most studios, is that they don't believe that it can be done. So they talk about it and they say, oh, it would be nice if. But really deep down, they feel like, no, it can never be done that you can have a work-life balance, right, while making games, while making great games.
Yeah.
And I believe the opposite, that we couldn't keep making great games together if we didn't have work-life balance. I personally would quit, you know, Jeff would quit, and the company would be over, right? So we said that that's the only way, and we worked out a way to do it. And I've given some talks. I mean, there's a lot of different, there's no silver bullet. You know, there's a lot of little things that add up to a place where this can happen, right? Options is definitely one of them, right? So again, if you have a tight deadline, there's just no choice, right? If you have a budget, it's the same thing, you know, that sort of stuff, right? And when you're making something completely original, if you are actually making something original, it's true, as you said, you don't know what's going to happen. By definition, it's original, so you can't plan exactly what's going to happen because it's new.
Yeah. Very cool. Well, thank you so much for taking the time today to share all your wisdom and all your history of the studio. It's been really fun talking with you and getting to see all these fun little guys.
Yeah.
And everyone should go check out all of the fantastic games that have come from this studio, including Don't Starve. And when are we going to see the next thing from you? Anything that you guys are...
Yeah, we're working on a lot of different games together.
Okay.
I really enjoy working with you all. So.
Very cool. It's always been a pleasure.
Thank you.
Thanks so much.
Cheers.